Good evening, folks, and welcome back again on this Saturday, the 6th day of June, 2020. I'm your host, Mark Call, and it looks like the narrative has shifted once again. That's where we'll begin today. Just a week or two ago, it was all about the COVID-1984 pandemic and booga, 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 how it is you have to give up all of your rights and your freedoms in order to be saved from something that Big Brother is telling you is oh so deadly, but you don't really see all that much evidence of it. On the other hand, it makes a great cover-up for the intended and inevitable meltdown of the biggest debt bubble the world has ever known, and along with it, the unconstitutional almighty fiat dollar. But shazam, just about the time that people were figuring out what a sham that was and starting to say we've had it with all of this, we're going to come out of our homes anyway, maybe even try to salvage our livelihoods, Big Brother comes up with another reason to stay in your homes, because this time we're going to sick looters, rioters, rapists, murderers, and everybody else that we can let out of prison just in time for all of this on the streets. Oh, but we got a perfectly good excuse. We let a bunch of nutcases in a city whose PD is filled with similar nutcases who've been doing atrocities on both white and black people, and by both white and black people for a long time, commit murder on video. But this time, for some reason, maybe because it's been oh so carefully orchestrated and set up, it's become not only an excuse for sticking yet another wooden stake in the economy, but just maybe finally getting that long-planned civil war going as well. So where I want to go today, folks, is, let's just call it, what's next after the riots? Will the planned insurrection fizzle, or has it finally reached critical mass? In other words, what's the next shoe to drop? And I'll suggest that if you've been paying attention for the last few months, the pattern is getting to be increasingly obvious. One thing's for sure, the Bolshevik Revolution won't be allowed to fizzle. So let's start off our look at what probably happens next with a look back at what's been happening and what's happening now. For several months now, I've referred to that one, as it turns out, very consistent continuing plan with names for various phases of it, like COVID-1984 to start. But the bigger picture remains, as it has for a number of years now, the final wooden stake in the heart of the Constitutional Republic. And with it, all of those once self-evident truths that formed the basis for our rule of law. Call it what you like, either Bolshevik Revolution 2.0 or Civil War 2.0. It amounts to the same thing. And I'll kick that off with a couple of salient points, courtesy of Ben Shapiro at RealClearPolitics.com, who writes that in the wake of the riots that have now, as intended, I note, spread across America, leaving businesses shattered and wounded communities in their wake, it feels as though the nation is collapsing around us, which, of course, again, is exactly the intent. And that's bizarre, he writes, considering that virtually all Americans agree with at least the following two propositions. And this, folks, is part of the reason why this planned destruction has been so insidiously, downright satanically evil and, of course, effective. Number one, and this ought to be obvious, it is evil for a police officer to place his knee on the neck of a prone suspect struggling to breathe for 8 long minutes and, of course, in the process, kill him, conveniently on videotape even, while he's smiling at the camera. And two, that breaking store windows, stealing televisions and shoes, looting, beating business owners, and attacking police officers is also wrong. Now here, folks, and I'll make Shapiro's point for him, note that those propositions are both true regardless of what color either the perps or the victims are in either case. But right there you start to see the problem, because you're not allowed to point that out, or something's wrong with you, because political correctness doesn't allow you to state what ought to and once was downright obvious. And all of this, notes Shapiro, should mean unity in the face of police brutality and rioting and looting, but somehow it doesn't. It doesn't because members of the enlightened political class, spurred on, of course, by their deep state puppet masters, have decided that instead of rallying against obvious evil, Americans must be categorized and placed into one of two boxes, either enlightened or bigoted, based on their answer to one question. Was and is America rooted in racism and bigotry? And if you fail to answer rapidly in the knee-jerk affirmative, Jawohl, mein Führer, because you think maybe it was supposed to be rooted in something else, like the principles of the Declaration of Independence, which are now Achtung verboten, well, that means you are complicit in racism and bigotry, says the media, academia, and various high-ranking members of the Bolshevik Progressive Leftist, a.k.a. Democrat Party. And by the way, folks, that includes a whole lot of rhino Republicans, too. But if you answer in the affirmative, you may be categorized among the enlightened, woke, aware, sensitive, and of course, decent, and therefore deserving of continuing to draw breath, and maybe even get some government bennies, too. And says Shapiro, obviously this is a nonsensical and downright dangerous game. There are a whole lot of lies at place here. I think they're obvious, folks, if you've been paying attention. But he does note correctly that all of this is intended to put the Republic at risk. And of course, your host has said for a while, we're way too late for that. The vast majority of Americans don't even know what a republic was supposed to be or why the founders so universally and unanimously rejected the idea of, well, what they called the devil's own government, demonocracy, a.k.a. mob rule. And by the way, you're seeing it live and on TV. So let's talk next about some elements of the strategy, starting with a piece from the Mises Institute and Ryan McMacken entitled, Three Ways That Lockdowns Paved the Way for These Riots. Yes, he points out up front, there are many reasons to oppose the bogus COVID-1984, as your host calls them, lockdowns. If you're a regular listener here, I'll stipulate that's pretty obvious, including, number one, the lockdowns popped the bubble. No, they didn't create the economic disaster. They just provided the detonator that set off the dynamite already in place. Number two, though, they destroyed social institutions. Things like churches, schools, coffee shops, bars, libraries, barbershops, and a whole litany of other things where people were once allowed to gather together and actually communicate. Imagine that. As McMacken puts it, researchers have long pointed out the importance of these institutions in preserving peace and as a means of diffusing social tensions and problems. A 2016 Brookings report put it this way, the most effective areas for building real community are in physical spaces where people can easily and routinely connect with each other. Churches, parks, rec centers, hairdressers, gyms, even fast food restaurants. So I guess if you really want to destroy community, start there. And that's exactly what the COVID-1984 purveyors of doom seem to have accomplished. And they're even trying to tell you it's the new normal. And finally, last but certainly not least, the lockdowns created a situation in which millions of, at least once upon a time, law-abiding Americans have been deemed criminals, and of course non-essential too, merely for seeking to make a living, leave their homes, or engage in peaceful trade with one another. And in many cases, violations of the Achtung lockdown orders have been, or even still are in many places, primarily far-left cesspools, treated as criminal acts by the police, resulting in increased negative interactions between police and citizens who, by no moral definition, are criminals of any sort. But it does at least pave the way for what we saw next now, doesn't it? Achtung, you are violating socialist distancing, und wir will hurt you. Trying to play baseball in the park with your child? That is a crime. Not wearing a mask? That's a crime. Well, unless you're looting a store, in which case we'll stand down and just have at it. If you've been paying attention, says McMacken, you've probably seen the stories. Police arresting mothers for using playground equipment. Arresting business owners for using their own property. Police beating people for the crime of standing on a sidewalk. Gee, how's that for increasing cohesiveness between the police and the public, especially if you're fixing to set neighbor against neighbor and get a good old insurrection going? Come to think of it, I'm sure it would help a lot if you released some real criminals from prison en masse for trivial things like larceny, rape, and murder, so you can put real criminals like mothers, hairdressers, and shop owners in their place. And besides, you need those larceny, rape, and arson skills out there on the street for what you've got planned anyway. Says the author, like it or not, the lockdown certainly created the perception among many that this is just another case of law enforcement targeting certain populations and ignoring real crimes by others. And the real beauty of that 80-20 truth is that at the very same time, you can use the great political divide there to increase the divisions that are already being exacerbated in a society anyway. How clever is that? And furthermore, he notes, working class people and those with fewer resources are far more likely to need extra income and venture outside during lockdowns. I would suggest, folks, they might even be willing to take a little on the side from the George Soros, Black Lives Matter, and Antifa types in the process. Yap, he suggests, there just might be side effects down the road. Yet, criminalizing millions of Americans and subjecting them to heightened police harassment is certainly not a recipe for social tranquility. But one thing's for sure, folks, it certainly is a recipe for socialist tyranny. So let me just say it this way, folks. I can't help but believe that the current massive civil unrest wasn't actually exacerbated quite a bit by the lockdowns and the accompanying economic and social destruction that set them up. In other words, first we had the plandemic, and then the plandemonic. This next story we've talked about at least in part two, but Christine Dolan and John Solomon at JustTheNews.com do a really good job of summarizing all the important points for where we're headed next. Bricks, fires, frozen bottle projectiles, it says, the organized tactics of America's violent and, yes, set up and planned in advance rioters. Law enforcement officials across the country begin to say that the anarchists who are inflaming peaceful demonstrations, at least allegedly honoring George Floyd, and transforming them instead into violent riots, as planned, your host suggests, are more organized, better coordinated, and supplied than any militants seen in any civil discord in years. Police intelligence units have uncovered encrypted and walkie-talkie communications, as well as socialist media postings that coordinate the delivery and hiding of weapons and projectiles and the direction of anarchists to specific locations at specific times. Almost like there was a deep state operation in progress here. Gee, do you think? In essence, they say these professional rioters have created command and control apparatus, as well as supply chains unseen in prior riots that followed the deaths of, say, Michael Brown, Ferguson, Missouri, or Freddie Gray in Baltimore, and the verdict in those officers who beat Rodney King in Los Angeles. Said one federal law enforcement official, quote, the anarchists have upped their game. Gee, folks, almost like they were being directed by, I don't know, say, somebody with community organizer experience. Acting U.S. Park Police Chief Gregory T. Monahan said Tuesday that one of the most troubling tactics they'd seen near the White House was anarchists trying to grab police officers' weapons during clashes. And other weaponry, he noted, was being hidden in areas where perpetrators could pick them up and use against officers. They said intelligence had received calls for violence against the police, and officers found caches of, quote, glass bottles, baseball bats, and metal poles hidden along the street. And, of course, as we've already talked about, in other cities, plural, stacks of bricks have been discovered in staging areas that end up being slammed against store windows by looters who don't seem all that surprised to find exactly what they need right there at hand. John Miller, the NYPD's Deputy Commissioner for Terrorism, disclosed this week that the anarchists have, quote, developed a complex network of bicycle scouts to move ahead of their so-called demonstrators in different directions, outflank police responses, and basically to coordinate what they're planning on doing next. And he noted all their pre-planning, too, saying that it included the preparation of supply lines for such items as gasoline, bottles, and rocks, as well as medics, who could then care for injured rioters and looters. They even raised bail money in advance and set up the people responsible for dispersing it. Said one Midwest law enforcement official, quote, this time they're more organized, more strategic, angrier. And now, he added, we have older local citizens who've protested peacefully for decades, calling and telling us, I'm not going out there because there's going to be violence. And this, said the official, is where this has now gone. And the story concludes by quoting former Ferguson, Missouri Police Chief Tom Jackson, who said, all of this seems like organized anarchy. These folks seem to be well-coordinated and well-funded. I think that there's some sort of logistics support. This has really evolved into a sort of insurgency that is hiding behind protesters and people exercising their rights. Unquote. And he added, back when the Ferguson riots caught them off guard, we had, quote, no idea of the power of social media. We do now. It's how these folks are communicating in the riots. I'll wrap up this segment by noting that more and more of us are recognizing that civil unrest and indeed civil war apparently is now inevitable. And as Brandon Smith wrote for AltMarket.com, here's how it will be exploited to bring in tyranny. Is it just a coincidence, he asks, that conservatives who were the most opposed to medical martial law only a week ago in the face of the plandemic are now actually considering the merits of a different kind of martial law in the face of the leftist-influenced riots? And who actually benefits from all this? Could it be the elitist establishment that's been calling for martial law all along? I've been hearing, he says, everywhere, the narrative in the liberty movement, that civil war is here, and now we have to support Trump and martial law in order to stop it. Well, he says, whether or not you realize that Trump is controlled opposition and he's got a cabinet overflowing with bankster elites and globalists that the liberty movement at least once stood against, here's what you have to understand. If the infiltrators here are the extreme communist organizations like Antifa or Black Lives Matter that receive funding from elites like George Soros and his Open Society Foundation, then we'd better consider the possibility that the intention isn't just to influence the protests, the riots, and the looting, but also to influence conservatives to react by supporting violent government power. You mean the same kind that brought us the NSA, FBI, CIA, and three or four coup attempts one after the other? And if, he says, they can trick so-called conservatives into suddenly supporting the lockdowns, curfews, and a National Guard and military presence in order to, well, this time at least, stop the protests, that'll be you next, then they will have defeated all of us without firing a shot, along with our constitutional principles. The bottom line, more government power is never the valid solution to any problem. Neither is totalitarianism. But you can certainly expect more trigger events to follow. And we already know the intended response. From there, we need to backtrack a bit next and fill in a couple of gaps. Over the weekend, as you probably remember, President Trump finally announced his intention to designate Antifa, the radical left-wing violence instigators who claim to be anti-fascist but seem to do everything the fascists did, whether they're too stupid to recognize it or not, and are in fact heavily involved in the spread of violence riding across the nation, as what they actually are, terrorists. And since their supporters seem to include lots of governors, most of Congress, and a whole bunch of socialist politicians all across the nation, you can expect there'll be fallout on that score. Mike Adams, commenting on that fallout, writes that Attorney General Bill Barr has followed up the president's declaration with his own affirmation, quote, "The violence instigated and carried out by Antifa and other similar groups in connection with the rioting is domestic terrorism and will be treated accordingly." And Adams says that according to his sources, word is going out via DHS that this terrorist designation is a real thing and about to be put in place, meaning it will change everything. Whereupon he tries to focus on what he thinks might be happening next. And most of this, folks, I would say is pretty sound, and in fact, your host has been talking about it for quite a while as well. A, this terrorism designation is a necessary step for Trump and America to stand up to the lawlessness, violence, and property destruction of the radical left, which is being coordinated and funded by communists. Your host has used the historic term Bolshevik, but we're still talking about totalitarian impulses and the forces that are pushing it. B, with this designation in place, so-called conservative media is going to begin documenting which left-wing news operations, politicians, and university professors have either donated money to Antifa or are involved in directly supporting such operations. All of those with ties to Antifa will be designated as aiding and abetting terrorism in America, which may in fact be a strategy, he writes, to take down CNN, which is completely run by anti-American communists and radical left-wing traitors to America. Number C, once the designation goes live, federal law enforcement agents, those that aren't already on the take, will shift from their current backing down stance to a stand your ground stance, meaning that rioters will begin to be shot in large numbers as they continue their attempts to attack federal buildings, law enforcement infrastructure, and officers of the law. All of this will happen all at once, he writes, as the order goes out that law enforcement should begin fighting back instead of abandoning buildings and territory. And the sudden increase in the shooting of left-wing rioters and Antifa operators will, of course, result in the left-wing media having a veritable hissy fit and whipping up a second wave of outrage against Trump, while the media will call for 10 times as many protesters to hit the streets and attack, yeah, those same buildings and that same infrastructure. And understand, he says, that all of this is precisely what the radical left and the deep state wants, an escalation into war, martial law, and, of course, continued economic collapse. They're not only willing but anxious to bring down America and, of course, in the process, Trump, in order to prevent him from having a second term, and whether he's actually serious or not, doing anything at all to slow down the advance. And when, he says, America then descends into a state of full-blown civil war, you'll see the following. Antifa running roadside bombs, IEDs, carrying out targeted assassinations of patriots and political leaders, continued left-wing attacks on key infrastructure, including power substations, in order to escalate mayhem and collapse. Brazen attacks against law enforcement officers nationwide, we're already seeing those, including ambushes set by Antifa terrorists. And then finally, race-based violence carried out by the left, targeting, of course, designated white males, especially if they're cisgendered, whom the left decrees are all Nazis, in spite of the fact that they don't know what that word means. Finally, coordinated raids, too, on white-owned businesses, white neighborhoods, and white business leaders who will be targeted for kidnap and ransom operations, like we already see in the Third World, and that'll be for as long as the race war narrative continues to hold up. The goal, of course, Antifa's actions will be a revolution against the military dictatorship of Trump, which they intend to make a self-fulfilling prophecy, giving the president no option but to declare martial law and use the National Guard as well as various military elements to protect America's crumbling infrastructure. Which leads us to China, which will activate their narco-terrorist cells that have already been, thank you Barry Sotero, pre-positioned across the United States. Cells, trained by Communist China and funded by their narco-terrorist profits, will immediately move to continue the sabotage of national infrastructure. And their targets, again, will include the power grid, water supplies, telecom, emergency response services, refineries, ports, airports, railways, and other transportation infrastructure, leaving America with major shortages in power, fuel, telecom, and other critical services. Understand, of course, that all of the communist-run, techno-fascist public-private partners, you know the names, Gulag, Two Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Vimeo, Apple, Wikipedia, etc., are all literally in bed with China and will operate in coordination with communist China to undermine America, censor the voices of the American people, and attempt to escalate the chaos. And if Trump is serious, he'll eventually have to designate them as enemy combatants and deal with them via the U.S. military. From there, Adams goes on to other international geopolitical developments we've talked about before, like China, meaning that when America reaches its peak weakness, as planned, China moves on Taiwan and Hong Kong, resulting in a rapid military escalation in Southeast Asia and the Pacific. But the real action happens when China activates its ground assets in Mexico and begins to invade the U.S. southern border. And don't expect that communist California will sit that one out either. Meanwhile, across the United States, again as planned, the inevitable food and fuel shortages will become severe, and citizens who fail to prepare in advance will find that they're dependent on Big Brother, even as food stamps and other government assistance begins to sputter and die. There's more, of course, but if what happens after that isn't obvious, it won't matter anyway. As always, though, the point is, forewarned is forearmed. Which brings us almost up to date, meaning we need a couple of examples. The first one comes from an unlikely place, and that would be the People's Republic of California, where the good people of a place called Yucapai, evidently not too far from San Bernardino, which served as a bad example and basically went up in flames, decided they'd had enough of the leftists and did exactly what I was just talking about, prepared for what was coming. As Chris Minahan writes for InformationLiberation.com, Antifa reportedly tried to invade the suburbs there at Yucapa, California on Tuesday, but the situation rapidly went south for them as they were confronted by prepared and, yes, folks, armed locals. As any number of posts and videos pointed out, Antifa was run out of town just as quickly as they tried to come in. And one would hope, now that that skirmish is over at least, as Chris Minahan puts it, that police would be busy trying to arrest looters and rioters rather than trying to punish a small town for defending themselves against same. But of course, in the new America, standing in the way of a mob trying to rob you in the name of social justice must be punished. And if the goal really is fomenting a civil war, folks, that too does fit the pattern now, doesn't it? So we'll go to break with one more warning, courtesy of Mike Adams and Natural News. It says they've learned Antifa operatives are organizing a plan to bus large numbers of Antifa terrorists to the vicinity of Sparta, Illinois, about 45 miles southeast of St. Louis, where they'll be directed to target rural white Americans by burning their farmhouses and killing their livestock. The purpose of the attack, say sources, is so that Antifa can send a message to so-called white America that, quote, not even rural whites are safe from their evil reach, and that if their radical left-wing demands are not met, and of course the United States doesn't descend into their planned tyranny, all of America will burn, not just the leftist cesspool cities. Sources tell Natural News the terrorists are currently expected to move along State Routes 154 and 4, seeking out rural targets, including isolated homes and farms, to cause maximum mayhem and property destruction. And they note that even though Facebook has blacklisted Natural News, and they won't allow any of their stories or warnings to be carried, it's possible they may alter their planned routes of destruction based on the widespread distribution of reports like this, and of course the ability of people to prepare. And that's what's most important. We'll be right back. Welcome back now, folks, to the second segment of the show for this evening. I'm still your host, Mark Call, and we're talking about the next shoe to drop in the current cycle. And by that I mean, of course, the current cycle of trying to completely destroy the United States. And yeah, there's a coup in there too, but that's not the real goal. The real goal has been for quite a while, and we've been seeing it coming for decades at this point, to completely destroy the constitutional republics, get rid of any semblance of the rule of law, and institute a totalitarian regime in its place. And at this point, I have to keep emphasizing one aspect of this, folks. These people are evil. They intend to, well, they come but to kill and destroy is one way to put it, and they will do anything, and by that I mean absolutely anything, to bring about the goal. So we're asking, what's next after the current riots? Well, this one this time, after so many false starts since Ferguson. Will it be successful? Will it fizzle? Or will it finally reach critical mass as they've been working on it for so long? Let's back up for a second and note that people got sick of the last bogus lockdown. And just when some folks were finally starting to rip off their masks, realizing they were nothing but a placebo anyway, and start to do something, like open their shops, go back to work, and try to reestablish community relations, bang! We get this. Change the narrative, enter a new distraction, and a whole lot more serious one, too. And it's convenient as well, because after all, we can't have Obama, Comey, Brennan, Hillary, Clapper, et al. Arrested or exposed now, can we? Let me say it again. The goal here is to protect those folks, because they're the ones that have been pushing this absolute level of treason. And by that, of course, we mean a war on the American people and the Republic for so long. At this point, what I want to do is return briefly to the story that we were doing when we hit the break, and that was from Mike Adams and his concern via various information that Antifa was next going to target some, well, rural areas, perhaps Sparta, Illinois, but if he did a good job of getting the word out, maybe they'll change their target to some other rural Illinois town. Literally all of the state, and for that matter, rural towns everywhere had better be waking up and taking note of this. But what's more important, and the thing I want to make sure we talk about before I move on to the next story here, is that all of this escalation will almost certainly target weak U.S. infrastructure, things like water, power, and telecommunications. I've talked about it for a long time. The infrastructure is vulnerable. For example, they say, we anticipate a very high probability that Antifa terrorists, if they carry out their planned mayhem, will likely target water towers with gunfire. And guess what, folks? It's pretty easy to poison bullets or just use the lead to poison the water supply. Water towers can be very easily destroyed by gunfire. It's not just a matter of getting them to leak, but you can induce stability or structural instability, more likely, and cause the collapse catastrophically of the containment structure. The idea is poison the water supply or destroy the water supply of rural towns, and that will cause high repair costs, which, guess what, they can't afford anyway. And the key is, much of America's infrastructure is shockingly vulnerable to what are called bad faith actors, and that's probably understating the case here, terrorists that are more than interested in causing mass poisonings, mayhem, and destruction. So, as he puts it, and I will echo this sentiment, prepare to secure your farms, your homes, your towns against the planned, long planned, Antifa and related deep state terror actions, and demand an end to your, infringements on your Second Amendment. Or, just do it. Just recognize that you have a God-given constitutionally protected right, whether or not the criminals in the state house in Illinois or in Chicago acknowledge that, because they don't acknowledge God either, or not. Now let me go from there to a story that I literally saw just in the last few minutes since I began the show here about Project Veritas, which seems to have infiltrated a Portland Antifa cell. It's called Rose City. Captured video of the meeting, and in it, satanically evil people talk about how to do the most damage to the folks that they hate. You know, like white folks. Hey, there's no racism here now, is there? And in Portland, members are actively plotting to commit violence against their enemies and do so without getting caught. Here's one quote that's actually in the video. Practice things like an eye gouge. Takes very little pressure to injure someone's eyes, said member Nicholas Safuni to the Project Veritas journalist. Police are going to be like, perfect, we can prosecute these Antifa effers. Look how violent they are. And not that we aren't, but we need to effing hide that S, he said. Consider instead things like destroying your enemy, not like delivering a really awesome right hand, right eye, left blow. You know, it's not boxing, it's not kickboxing, it's like destroying your enemy. The whole goal of this, right, is to get out there and do dangerous things, well, to somebody else, as safely as possible. Does this sound to you, folks, like people that are protesting the injustice done by out-of-control, racist, bigoted police officers? Or is it just different bigots working for the same satanic god that are trying to do as much evil as they possibly can and just looking for another convenient excuse? And, oh yeah, they've got one. All right, from there, I'm going to skip ahead to a couple of pieces that I think are truly important, and I'll say this up front. These are not pleasant to contemplate, but hey, the goal here is to be realistic. After all, come out of her, my people, is not just a very good suggestion. It's a requirement, given what is coming. And of course, on that score, Scripture has been very clear for a long time. It's just that more and more people are either waking up and saying, hey, you know, the God of the Bible was right all along, or they say, on the other hand, no, we don't like this. We don't want anything to do with it. Put their hands over their ears. Nah, I'm not going to listen. And that, of course, is part of how the nation is being divided. All right, this next piece comes from Jeff Nyquist, J.R. Nyquist, at his website. And it's called A Note to Our Generals. And he talks about something that yours truly has been talking about literally for years. I interviewed at least one or two of the people he mentions here probably 20 years or more ago. I'm talking about Colonel Stanislav Lunev and some others. But the story begins like this. The Chinese and Russian grand strategy of today evolved from the ideas of Soviet Marshal V.D. Sokolovsky and KGB General M. Mironov in the late 1950s. They were led by Leonid Brezhnev. It was conceived as a long-range strategy that would carry well into the 21st century. Well, here we are. Its military focus centered on a decisive weapon in the next war, strategic nuclear missiles, which could be safely employed only after a prolonged period of low-intensity, asymmetrical warfare aimed at disrupting the United States. Think about that a second and say, okay, put that in easier-to-understand English. That's what they've been doing. They and the Communist Chinese and their allies, folks, embedded within the U.S. deep state. And yes, I'm talking Obama and the Bushes before them and the Clintons before them and all of the minions of Satan who walk in men's shoes who have literally been selling out this nation and attempting, well, for personal profit, or maybe in Clinton's case it was for little girls, who knows, but to do all kinds of evil and in the process insulate themselves and achieve more power. Any way we want to interpret the events of the last 60 years, says Jeff Nyquist, a survey of Chinese and Russian defectors and their testimony, together with known strategic writings, points to a carefully orchestrated combo play envisioned by Russian and Chinese strategists before they split back in 1960 and then re-envisioned in the early 90s when they began their realignment. And he notes that the writings of Jay Senya, Alexander Golitsyn, Stanislav Lunev, and Viktor Suvorov suggest that this is a combination play. It would take the form of a strategic sequence which aims first
at collapsing the U.S. economy. I guess I'd have to say, check, that's a fait accompli. That collapse would then be exploited politically, and in the final phase, the resulting unstable political situation would open the U.S. to a surprise military attack. So there you go. As if we didn't have enough to worry about with Antifa radicals gouging people's eyes out, destroying their farms, killing their animals, and basically turning the cities into flaming cesspools, well, there's an external threat too. So we've got enemies within and enemies without, and if you go back and look at military history, folks, this is precisely how it's done. The strategic sequence would also include, here we go, civil unrest in the cities, an intensification of ideological differences, which have been exploited now for about, at least 8 to 20 years, and growing popular dissatisfaction with the government. Two diversionary operations would run parallel to each other in this sequence. First, various types of weapons of mass destruction, gray terror attacks. And by the way, that would include bioweapons, don't you know? And a diversionary U.S. Civil War scenario. That scenario would be extremely useful for setting up the surprise attack on U.S. command and control, ICBMs, and bomber bases. And for example, they note, enemy special forces troops could attack missile bases wearing U.S. military uniforms. Now let me pause and say that I have some good friends that have been talking about this for years, including Paul Martin, who runs Revolution Radio. And he notes that these people, including Spetsnaz, have been in the United States, welcomed here by regimes at least since the Obama era, and they've been doing precisely this. They have been setting up. They have been ignored by the press, and if you knew about them, you were called a conspiracy theorist. All right, says Nyquist, the following 5 points suggest that that Sino-Russian sequence is now well underway. Number one, the Hong Kong protests, in which thousands of anti-Communist Party, Chinese Communist Party activists have either been arrested or killed. That appears to have been a planned provocation, he says, ready, by the PRC Ministry of State Security. And that was done in advance of the COVID-1984 plandemic. And the timing, of course, is highly suspicious. Number two, the COVID-1984 plandemic itself provides ideal cover for mass military mobilization of the PLA, the People's Liberation Army. And in fact, Chinese officials openly talk about, and I've done these stories, as have many, many others, preparing for war. We see it first on the trade level and then later on, let's just say, more and more levels. Number three, in this context, we ought to ask whether or not the collapse of oil prices, remember that? Well, with all the other stuff going on, a lot of folks probably aren't paying attention to it. But whether that was part of a larger unseen collaboration, which hurt the U.S. energy sector disproportionately. Now, remember, the goal was energy independence. Trump's made the claim. But here's the problem. The shale oil and other industries in the United States that were built on the backs of really cheap, indeed almost free money, would not have happened had it not been for free money and high oil prices. The truth is they cannot make a profit anywhere close to current oil prices. They have been decimated as a result. A lot of them are going to go bankrupt, out of business, and those fields and plants will be shut down. As if the problem wasn't bad enough, COVID-19 probably put a wooden stake in them too. So not only has the U.S. energy sector been hurt disproportionately, remember, the Russians have a big oil and natural gas business. They're one of the biggest in the world, if not the biggest. But that's also helped China acquire a massive supply of cheap oil, almost like if they were planning for a war, that would be a really good thing. Number four, aside from the ballooning out-of-control debt bubble, there is a problem of shrinking U.S. tax revenues. How, asked Nyquist, will the U.S. military maintain its military machine in the midst of an unprecedented cash crunch? How will the U.S. ever rebuild its nuclear deterrent, which is now nearing the end of its shelf life anyway, when there's no money? And let's not forget the pending hyperinflation. Number five, the riots and the attending incendiary attacks on U.S. cities seem to be part of the enemy's civil war scenario. If they succeed, it will, the domestic situation worsens and the country divides into hostile camps, you can expect nuclear strikes against U.S. strategic assets. And as we'll get to in the next story, you can probably expect other things too, like what Dave Hodges, who's been writing about it for years, refers to as the Tet Offensive. And if you remember the remake of the Red Dawn movie, where originally the producers wanted to make it Communist China that was attacking the U.S. In this go-around, Oh, no, the Communist Chinese, which pretty well own Hollywood and most of California anyway, said, no, no, that's not going to work. We better change that, or you better change that. It's going to be, I think it was North Korea, although admittedly I didn't bother to watch the second propaganda effort. The key here is we're seeing enemies within and enemies without, all with the same ideology. It's communist, it's fascist, whether they call it Antifa or not, and it's the same goal because they serve the same master. Now, finally, again, let's go to that piece that I mentioned from Dave Hodges at the Common Sense Show. He describes what he calls six overlapping stages, and I would suggest they're pretty accurate, and at least all of these things represent one set of cogent alternatives as to what might lie ahead. I'll note as I go through this that while I picked these two to talk about today, there are many, many others. I've talked about some of them. If you know who Joel Skousen is at the World Affairs Brief, he's been writing about an eventual Sino-Russian attack on the United States, probably nuclear in nature, for at least a decade now, and we're getting very close to that. So these people are not alone in suggesting here are some obvious things that you know military planners have been looking at. Oh, and you also know the deep state has been doing intentionally to undermine the U.S. defenses and prepare to literally open the gates and let them on in. All right, back to Hodges, his six overlapping stages. Stage one, and we're already there, destroy the economy. Yep, an economic collapse event almost always precedes regime change. You've heard the expression ordo ab chao, order out of chaos. It typifies the thinking because the populace had to be rendered helpless first. Essential resources need to be in short supply so that people will be dependent on the new ruling class. And recently we've got any number of things that really make it obvious. I won't rehash these, but again, the supply chain is broken. The United States economy is dead. Stick a fork in it. And if they can keep it shut down with riots or looting or another phase of the COVID-1984 pandemic, bioweapon phase two, who knows? But it's not difficult at this point to say once it's down, keep kicking it until it just plain dies and doesn't get back up. The COVID-19 lockdown, of course, destroyed the economy and diminished the ability of the military, notes Hodges, to even try to maintain a long-term fight against a numerically superior opponent like the Communist Chinese. They can literally promise their young men, hey, we'll get you over to America, you rape, murder, and pillage, and maybe you'll even get a woman, because they're outnumbered, remember, as a result of their birth planning dramatically, and those guys are really jonesing for a chance to get themselves some you-know-what over in the United States. Sad as it is to talk about this, this is the reality. And remember, we have a whole bunch of peacetime industries that are largely in ruin, not only due to the COVID-1984 lockdown, but of course the planned destruction under the Obama regime. They were sent overseas, there were tax benefits, all kinds of critical resources were exported. The military broke a whole lot of basic rules and became dependent on overseas and potentially hostile forces for critical military things. And of course you have the deliberate dumbing down of the U.S. workforce too. All right, further, it's clear that the revolutionary regime is intending to use artificially generated food scarcity. Kissinger's been talking about this, so has the UN folks, for decade after decade. This is only news to people that get their news from the criminally negligent networks out there. Hodges notes that the Common Sense Show has documented how 19 food processing plants have already been rendered inactive using the excuse of COVID-1984. There's been no attempt to keep those plants open so that the food that they once produced could reach our tables. This is deliberate. And as a result, we now have farmers and ranchers who have been forced to destroy millions of cattle, millions of chickens, poultry, and other things, and are dumping large volumes of milk simply because they can't get the products to market. Further, if you destroy the restaurant industry, remember, about half the food in this country goes to them. It's real difficult to retarget it because of FDA requirements and all kinds of things. In other words, for all kinds of reasons that I've talked about now for well over a year, since the disastrous crops last season, we have been set up for a famine, for a food crisis, and now the COVID-1984 flu has destroyed what's left. We're eating yesterday's harvest, as he puts it. All across the country, we're beginning to see the effects of food inflation, including purchase limitations at major outlets and outright shortages. So you can expect extreme famine and food dependency is in our immediate future, and it's all by design. Yeah, we've talked about the debt. It's skyrocketed to numbers that would have once been incredible, unbelievable. 10 trillion. Just take a 10 and put lots of zeros after it. 1/3 of the country is now unemployed. 5 million mortgage payments will not be made this month. And all of that will profoundly destabilize the economy. Oh, and the Fed will print money like there's no tomorrow. And if they get their way, there won't be. So again, think hyperinflation real soon. No doubt about it. Stage one has achieved its goal of creating extreme economic instability, and the people are vulnerable. Welcome to the creation of the looting mentality, is the way he puts it. All right, stage two, and we've got several to go through. Plunge the country into total chaos. Oh, yeah. Well, we see how that's working. We've got Antifa. We've got the deep state. We've got all kinds of people who could care less about one dead guy. They could care less about all kinds of other dead guys that the police state has been killing for a long, long time now that they haven't been paying attention to. It's all about divide and conquer and burn, baby, burn. They're trying to regain control that they were beginning to lose. It's not just about black and white either, folks. There's also an attempt here to set up the divide of the thin blue line. Cops, us versus them. And it's interesting how so many people that were saying just a few weeks ago, oh, the cops are out there destroying businesses, arresting people for not wearing their masks or for playing baseball with their children in the park. Now we're supposed to all of a sudden be on their team when they're being killed by Antifa? Do you see how this works? It's the 80-20 rule that's confused people and say, I don't know which is right and which is wrong anymore because everybody is so stinking full of nastiness. And furthermore, he notes the mostly Democratic governors are preventing the police from arresting looters. They want to let the chaos spread, but they weren't preventing the police from arresting people who were violating the bogus COVID-19 restrictions. And by the way, this was all the while many of them were releasing truly violent criminals from the prisons so that they could put in innocent folk who weren't towing the COVID line. Number three, and this is unpleasant, but we'll talk about it. There's never been a revolution, notes Hodges. You can think back to the French Revolution, if not before, that didn't use death squads and false flag attacks, too. We've seen those, especially when it comes to undermining the Second Amendment, for years. We're about ready to find out, he notes, why it is that the socialists, masquerading as Democrats, wanted totally open borders. And, part of the reason is because we've now got an estimated 1.3 million terrorists that are in America, sleeper cells, awaiting the activation call. And as the race war of stage two, if it begins to fade in intensity, well, they'll amp it up with, guess what, some other really massive events that are intended to scare the you-know-what out of people. As he puts it, in America now, all targets are on the table. And let's not forget, MS-13, and he says it was verified by his sources in Border Patrol, were let into the country in 2014 or 15 during the Obama regime, in the height of the last immigration crisis. And they, in Central America, play the exclusive role of assassins for public figures who don't bend to the will of the cartels. You can expect to see that here. Political hits on media figures, corporate execs, key opposition politicians. Living in America will be a lot like living in Bosnia during their civil war. And the problem is most Americans can't fathom how ugly it's going to get. Remember, ISIS, Hamas, and all kinds of other terrorist groups are here in great numbers. And maybe, I'll put it this way, the fact that the sporting events have been shut down is a covert way of saying, hey, if people aren't gathered together in sporting events, at least there's not as much of a target for mass executions. But in any case, he believes that one of the elements of this is to promote a conflict necessary in order to give the United Nations justification to enter U.S. soil with foreign troops under what Obama signed during literally his waning days in office, the so-called Kigali Principles. And this plan has been in effect for some time. He notes that in the United States we have white hats and black hats, various branches of the military, some of which will be loyal to the Constitution, others won't. And we've even seen various so-called generals of late prattling about how loyal they are to the Constitution, all the while they could care less about your God-given, once constitutionally protected rights, you peons, you. He believes that the Army and Air Force, and I've seen polls that verify that, would probably, along with the intelligence agencies, led by the likes of Brennan and Clapper, would side with the UN, while the Marines and the Navy, and especially the nuclear submarine fleet, would probably decide to stay with the American people, honor their oath, and protect them. But hey, that's the beginning of the real Civil War. We don't have time to talk about it, but guess what happens next? If the Civil War isn't effective, well, yeah, the Communist Chinese essentially own much of, well, Central America from the Panama Panama Canal North, and no doubt a weakened America will face the possibility of a bioweapons attack, could be phase two of the binary bioweapon, and the resulting Chi-Com Red Dawn invasion will then commence. So, a bottom line with all of these things here, folks, is we have seen, whether we recognize it or not, a massive treason perpetrated on the American people. What I will suggest is pay attention to the triggers. How will you know when we're getting there? Well, the power grid is one obvious example. The internet, when they go down, along with the phones, be concerned. If you see an assassination of the president, or if he steps down or is forced to resign, or on the other hand, even if he does what he was supposed to do, lock him up, starting with Obama at all, there will probably be escalation. Obviously, you have water and food riots and a lot of things on the horizon, including hyperinflation. So be aware, prepare yourself, and remember, most importantly, if things get truly ugly, there is only one force in the universe that you can really count upon when all kinds of other things are coming down that are beyond our ken. And that, of course, is the one true creator. Although a big part of the problem today is that Big Brother wants to not only get rid of him, but replace him. And history shows where that leads.